98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
Top stories of the day right here on the Burns and Gambo show at 4 o'clock every day. We call it the 4 o'clock reset here on 98.7 FM, Arizona sports station, starting with maybe the most curious story of the day, the Houston Texans, the only team left in the NFL that hasn't hired a head coach, conducting a couple of interviews today. One with former Lions head coach Jim Caldwell. Okay, that makes sense. And the other with former Cardinals quarterback Josh McCown. And that one is getting a lot of reaction on social media right now. Me tell you, Gambo, people who think that the Texans are nuts, people that the Texans are, man, if Eric Bieniemy can't get a gig and Josh McCown can, what's wrong with this deal? I mean, this thing is blowing up right now on social media. It's nuts. Yeah.
Oh, maybe they're trying to trade, you know, Deshaun Watson. They're trying to make sure that Deshaun Watson gets traded. I mean, that doesn't matter. Listen, maybe down the road Josh McCown could be a good coach, but no, listen, I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, Eric Bieniemy can't get a job, and he's been working his way up the ladder forever, and Josh McCown can, you know, go right from playing in the NFL to coaching. I mean, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like a good fit to me.
No, not now. One day, sure. Guys, got to get a little coaching experience first. Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network insider, draft insider. In his first mock draft of the year, has the Cardinals taking a pass rusher, Jalen Phillips, with his 16th overall pick. And I think that would be one of those players that most Cardinal fans would probably be okay with when it's all said
and done. Oh, 100%. I mean, 100%. You can go get yourself a pass rusher. You know, you got 1 year left on Chandler Jones's contract. You can put yourself in a position, you know, to have a guy that replaces him without you having to go spend a lot of money in free agency. That makes a lot of sense.
Meanwhile, the conference championship games are coming up this weekend. Great news, expected news, but great news for the defending champ Kansas City Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes told reporters he has been cleared from the NFL's concussion protocol and that he is good to go for the game. Not so good news. Well, good news, bad news for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Antonio Brown is out. Bruce Arians ruled him out today. The Bucs wide receiver will not play, but Vita Vea is active for the Bucs for this game. They're a very talented defensive tackle, bit of a game wrecker. That might be a significant development for this game if you're talking about pressuring Aaron Rodgers on Sunday.
Sure. And I think that they, you know, with the guys that they have, you know, Evans and Godwin and Gronkowski, I think they'll be able to overcome Antonio Brown. He has been playing bad. I mean, he could help them, and Tom Brady has a pretty good connection with them, and I think he had a couple of good catches in the last game, but I think that they can overcome the loss of Antonio Brown. Getting Vita Vea back, you know, that could help, like you mentioned, really, when you want to get that pass rush on Aaron Rodgers.
College hoops last night, crushing loss for ASU, a decent lead in the final minutes of their game against U of A, but it came down to a final play, one that Bobby Hurley was not happy with at all.
Ahead to Akinjo, 4 seconds, 3 seconds. Akinjo, a three-pointer, partially blocked, and the rebound caught and put in at the buzzer by Tubelis, and Arizona wins it, 84-82.
What you didn't hear was the moment that led to that game-winning shot, and that was a no-call on Remy Martin. Tubelis appeared to have hit him pretty hard in a game where the whistles were flowing pretty well. Remy couldn't get a call, and Bobby was really, really mad about it after the game.
Yeah, and listen, you know, there was so many opportunities for them to not be in that situation. So I, Bobby's whining a lot, and we'll talk about this in a little while. But they were up by 7, you know, with 4 minutes left in the game. Close it out, close out the game. It shouldn't have been that close. So disappointing season for ASU basketball. Very disappointing season.
Suns Nuggets tonight, 8 o'clock tip time here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station, and two players that we weren't sure were going to be available are available. For the Suns, Jalen Smith, their first-round pick from this year's draft, has been cleared to return. Michael Porter Jr. is active and will play against the Suns tonight, according to Adrian Wojnarowski. He's been out in the health and safety protocol since December 29th. He's a guy who averages nearly 20 points and 7 rebounds per game.
Yeah. I know, you know, he hasn't played in a long time, so we'll see what kind of conditioning he's in, because that'll be a big part of it, his conditioning and how much he can contribute. But They've got one guy playing well for them right now, and that's Jokic. And nobody else is really playing well. So they could use the reinforcements with guys like Porter coming back.
Yeah, Murray's been dealing with an elbow. Of course, Jeremy Grant's now in Detroit. So it's a different team than what we saw last year in the bubble. And obviously at 7-7, they haven't lived up to the high expectations that people had of them. But that game is coming up at 8 o'clock tonight here, as I mentioned, on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Our top story of the day comes to us, though, from Major League Baseball, where, and it's not just Major League Baseball. I saw Kyler Murray tweet about it today. Cody back at the station pointed out to me a tweet sent out by the Atlanta Falcons, not the Atlanta Braves, but the Atlanta Falcons, that they're retiring number 44 for this season in honor of Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron passed away at the age of 86. To call him an icon doesn't do enough justice to Hank Aaron. He was a true legend and a true American hero for the role that he played in sports and culture for decades and decades and decades.
Yeah, you know, I got on my group chat today, and I sent like a couple of photos of my some of my Hank Aaron cards that I have. And, you know, one of my buddies has like a rookie Hank Aaron card, and he sent the picture of that. And it's just, I mean, Hank Aaron, you know, as a kid growing up, you know, in the 70s, you know, I caught the tail end of Hank Aaron's career, but the respect for the all-time home run king and how great he was. And, you know, I don't know anybody that didn't like him as a player. I mean, he was just a great, great baseball player. Now, you know, for him, like, he didn't play in the big market like a lot of the other stars did. He didn't play in New York like Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle did. You know, he didn't play in any of the big markets. He was in, you know, Milwaukee and in Atlanta. And so I think that that probably hurt him a little bit. But to me, he'll always be the all-time home run king. I know we had Tim Kirkjian on and said, you know, he doesn't really buy that. But I always will. And he's one of the greatest baseball players that ever lived. Like, if you made a top five list, I can't imagine that he's not going to be on most people's top five list.
Yeah, I for me, this one, and look, I'm just old enough to, you know, appreciate what Hank Aaron did, but I'm just young enough to say that I really didn't get to see, you know, the night he broke Babe Ruth's record, I was 3 years old. So I've only seen that moment, and I've seen the highlight again and again and again. He hits the home run, and he circles the bases, and the two guys come out of the stands and start running with him between second and third base. I mean, it's, and the Vin Scully call. It's all classic. The part about Hank Aaron to me that the reason why I can really embrace calling him a true American hero, which sometimes we use that word way too much to talk about athletes and what they do. But Hank Aaron, you know, was from the Deep South, playing for a Southern team in the early 70s when he broke a white man's record. And the death threats he received, there's one of the obituaries I read this morning, it was from Richard Justice on MLB.com. As he approached it, there was such tension among his black Braves teammates that they joked about not sitting beside him in the dugout for fear an assassin would shoot the wrong player. I mean, these are the things that he had to deal with when he was chasing Babe Ruth's record, and that he handled it with such dignity and such grace and such class, and, you know, didn't really show outwardly the kind of anger that you might expect from a human being in a moment like that, who was getting all that hate for just playing a game the way he was. I mean, that to me is what elevated him to true legend slash hero status. I mean, not everybody's wired to handle something like that, and he was, and that's why I put the hero tag on him, and I don't put that word on a lot of professional athletes very lightly, because I think he truly was a hero.
No, I agree. I mean, 23 seasons in the majors, he never struck out 100 times in a season. I always find that phenomenal when you look at players like Joe DiMaggio, who maybe I think he struck out 20 times once. I mean, these guys that didn't strike out, home run hitters that don't strike out, right? Never struck out 100 times in a season. He had only 5 seasons in which he struck out 65 times or more. 10 seasons of 30 homers, and fewer than 65 whiffs. He was a consistent player all the way to the end. You know, he never hit the 50 home runs, right? But he hit 40 a bunch of times. He was just very, very consistent from the time he was in the Negro Leagues for a short amount of time. And then, you know, he got offered 2 contracts. One was by the Giants and one was by the Braves. and the Braves offered $50 more a month, so he took that. So he took that deal over the Giants, where he could have been teammates with Willie Mays. I thought that was a great story. I loved it. But you look back on him now, and, you know, he is still Major League Baseball's career leader in runs batted in. Still today, nobody has more runs batted in their career than him. He is still Major League Baseball's leader in extra base hits. Nobody has more extra base hits than him. Nobody has more total bases than him. So still today, even though, you know, Bonds broke his record, and I don't agree with it, I still, you know, view Aaron as the guy, but that's my prerogative and how I get to view it. He still is the all-time leader in RBIs, extra base hits, and total bases. Remarkable.
ASU, tough loss last night to their in-state rivals, but it wasn't so much the loss. It was Bobby Hurley's reaction to the loss that we've got to talk about, and we will, coming up right here on the Burns and Gambo Show. So, setting this moment up, there was a foul that wasn't called. Remy Martin looked like he got hammered, no whistle, play on. And U of A gets the ball last night after this moment, comes down, sets up for the game-winning shot, and in the words and the description of Tim Healy.
Ahead to Akinjo, 4 seconds, 3 seconds. Akinjo, a three-pointer, partially blocked, and the rebound caught and put in at the buzzer by Tubelis, and Arizona wins it, 84-82.
It was Tubelis who actually blocked the shot, knocked the shot away from Remy Martin, and got away with a call that didn't happen, at least depending on your point of view. And so the fact that he was the one who hit the game winner, it was, you know, injury to insult last night. Well, speaking of insulted, Bobby Hurley was very, very insulted last night and really didn't want to talk much about anything else other than the call that didn't happen against Remy.
We deserve to win the basketball game tonight. I thought that Remy Martin, after watching it live and then watching it again on film after, clearly was fouled by a player in the restricted area, that player did not leave his feet. He was contacted. His arms did not go straight up. And the guy should have been whistled a foul and put on the free throw line.
And that, look, he referenced other things, Gambo, but that was...
God, Bobby, how many games have you won because a call went the other way, your way? Come on, man. Come on. You had a 7-point lead late in the game, 4 minutes left. You know, Remy hits a three from the top of the key. You're up 76-69 with 4:40 left. You're going to whine over this one call that didn't go your way? I mean, where were the stops? Terry's playing with four fouls. He hits a three. You know, then Graham hits a free throw. Tubelis on the screen and roll, takes a pass from Akinjo, scores on a lay-in. 2:43 left. Where was the defense there? You know, where was that? Christopher hits a three. You're up by five with 2 minutes left. 2 minutes left, you're up by five. What happened? Akinjo hits a three. Where was the defense when Akinjo hit the three? You know, Verge missed a shot that could have won it. You got to call on the offensive foul. They called an offensive foul with Tubelis, stretched his leg out there. You got that call, but then, you know, you didn't get the other call. Like, you can't whine over these calls, Bobby. It sounds terrible. I mean, it does. Win the basketball game. You had a 7-point lead with 4.5 minutes left. Close it out. Don't blame the official for why you lost.
He didn't want to talk about anything else last night. And there was another comment where he said, I don't know what else we really need to discuss tonight. And he brought up other things that didn't go their way. He said, we can talk about the turnovers, we can talk about this, we can talk about that. Because I don't really, as if, and most people who were there as part of the Zoom call, as if Bobby was trying to suggest that nothing else in that game mattered. I don't know what else we really need to discuss tonight. Which kind of suggests that nothing else that happened in that game mattered. And that's, you know, that's just not true. You know, that's just, that's never the case. A game like last night never, ever, ever comes down to one thing, one missed call, one whatever. There's a myriad of reasons why ASU lost that basketball game last night. And I wonder, and I'll be the first to admit it, I haven't been on one Bobby Hurley Zoom call this year, so you can call me out if you want. I got to wonder if his frustration with a season that has gone horribly sideways kind of caught up with him last night.
I think
that's what, in part, that rant was.
Well, they haven't won a basketball game since December 13th, like, you know, 2 weeks before Christmas. the last time they won a basketball game. They beat Grand Canyon by a point. Now, they've lost five games in a row. They had a bunch of postponements, like four postponements, but they're not playing well. And this was a season when they got Bagley and they got Christopher, and then when Remy decided to come back, oh, the sky was the limit. I mean, who didn't think that this was a Sweet 16 team? Who didn't think that ASU was going to the NCAA tournament and was going to at least get to the Sweet 16 with all this talent, right? They're not even going to the NCAA tournament. Eh, nope. Yeah, they're not a good basketball team. They're not going to. They're not going to be playing in March Madness. They're not going to play.
No,
they're not good enough.
No, and the frustration. And again, I'm playing the role here of, you know, dime store shrink. But the frustration's got to be twofold. I mean, it's got to be twofold because this season's obviously not going to be what you thought it was going to be, and more on that in just a second. But also that once you get beyond this season, what does next year look like? Will you have Christopher? Will you have Bagley? Remy's going to be gone. Verge is going to be gone. There was everything was kind of building to this moment for ASU basketball, right? Everything they had done the last couple of years was building towards this moment. You go out and you get Christopher. You go out and you get Bagley. You convince Remy to come back. You convince Verge to come back. You everything was in place. And now if all of that is gone next year, in some ways it's going to feel like Bobby's going to have to start over from scratch to a certain extent, assuming Christopher and Bagley leave. And I don't know, maybe they don't. But I think there's short-term frustration, and I think there's long-term frustration in that you're not quite sure what next year is going to look like for ASU basketball. But you're right, Gambo. I'm having a hard time thinking of a team, and I'm sure there are lots of examples. You brought up the U of A basketball team that lost to Buffalo. I'm having a hard time thinking of teams that had high expectations that came woefully short of those expectations. People were talking about ASU basketball like they were going to be a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. They're not going to get anywhere near the tournament. I can't remember the last time we had a team that was that short of their own expectations.
No. All the previews for ASU and all, like, you know, they had them as a top 25 team. I mean, every preview that you read was, you know, this team was a lock to go to the NCAA tournament and challenge for the Pac-12 title. And this is going to be, you know, one of their best years. I mean, bringing in Josh Christopher, bringing in Marcus Bagley. You know, you lost Romello White, right? That was tough. But when Remy decided to come back, you had Jalen House, you had Lawrence, you had Graham, you had Tayshaun, you had Alonzo. You felt like, okay, this is the team that's going to go deep into the NCAA tournament. And then they can't get out of their own way. I write it off. I mean, I don't have, you know, this is just a bad year. I mean, Bobby will be back next year. It's going to be, listen, it won't be any talk about Bobby taking another job, like, because he had all this, you know, if he would have taken ASU to the Sweet 16, we might have had those discussions. Is Bobby going to leave? But with as poorly as they played, you're not going to have any of that now.
Nope, you won't have to worry about that at all. And then the strange thing, and everything about sports has been strange for the last, you know, 10 months or so. These two teams play again on Saturday. I mean, just boom, quick turnover. Saturday or Sunday? I can't remember exactly.
Monday.
Monday. Oh, see,
they moved the game up, right? They moved the game.
Yeah, it was supposed to be March 6th, but now it's Monday.
Yeah, because they wanted to give them, ASU in particular, right? They wanted to give them that last week if they had a chance to reschedule any games. That kind of opens up that whole last week for them, right?
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is, and Sarah, you could comment on this. I mean, U of A wasn't supposed to be good this year. And Sean Miller did an excellent job of bringing in a bunch of, you know, 3-star recruits and, you know, guys, 4-star recruits, and just getting players to come in, transfers and European players. And
a real,
you know,
piecemeal kind of team, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, they don't have the typical U of A team that's going to have, you know, two guys go into the NBA draft after 1 year or 2 years. And they're winning. They're good. Like, they're not going to go to the NCAA tournament because of the self-imposed, you know, penalties that they have that they put on themselves. But this is a pretty good U of A basketball team. They have exceeded expectations.
Certainly. Certainly. I don't think there's much more that Arizona basketball fans can ask for, especially given that, well, the regular season is their season. And so enjoy it while it's there. Yeah.
It is the least recognizable U of A basketball team I think I've ever witnessed in since, I swear to God, since Steve Kerr, Sean Elliott, 1987-88. I mean, like, I watched that game last night. Who's that? Who's that?
How do you say that?
Who's that guy? I swear. I mean, like every year I'm somewhat decent about Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm familiar with it. It's a good team, recognizable names, draft picks, as Gambo said. Guys are going to be in the first round. I didn't have the slightest clue who some of those guys were last night. It was weird. It was almost surreal watching that game, not having any recognizable names or faces on the U of A basketball program. So, yeah. Interesting.
It feels like when the season started, I had to really sit down with the roster and be like, okay, who is this team this year?
Who
I had to learn
you?
Them.
Right.
Yeah.
Like five guys that they got like within, you know, right before the season started. Like they weren't going out there and, you know, recruiting all these, you know, players. They were getting some transfers coming in and some European guys coming in. And when you go through that roster, you're right. There's not a lot of like household names in there, but they've gelled pretty well together.
Yeah.
A lot of international. Suns getting reinforcements ahead of tonight's game, but so are the Nuggets. And now this game, these next two games for the Suns. Very interesting litmus test in some ways for both of these teams. And we'll tell you why next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Send it back to Sarah. We were just talking about ASU basketball a second ago. That is the subject of today's Twitter poll question of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
Happy Friday to you, Sarah. What do you have for us today?
Andy, happy Friday to you too. Man, I woke up this morning and was like, you can do it.
Really?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's it's been one of those weeks for me.
Why? I was the same way.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Sarah. After you.
It's my brother just got emergency surgery today, which we found out about last night. Another family member is on their way out. So it's just kind of been a week.
Oh, another family member's on their way out?
Yes, of life.
Oh, that sucks.
It's okay. Thank you for asking.
It's okay.
It's everybody is suffering loss right now. It's not okay, but who isn't suffering loss at this point, you know? It's just kind of a fact of life. Hard. So now that I've just bummed everybody out,
Bobby Hurley would like to go back to the call, please.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, Bobby Hurley's like, can we talk about last night's game, please? Oh my gosh. But we are talking about ASU.
Sorry, Sarah. We are sorry to hear all that.
Oh, thank you.
I had. We're all separated. Gambo's at his house. I'm at my house. You and Cody are back there at the radio. So I had no idea any of that was going on. So our condolences. And man, I'm sorry to hear that's happening. That's too bad.
Thank you.
That's really tough. Sorry.
Yeah. I don't really say anything because it's just a hard time for everybody. So I know everyone's going through it. To our poll question, we actually have two. One is open-ended about Hank Aaron, and we'll hit that in a second. But we're starting with your good old original kind of poll where you can just vote on it, and there are your answers. ASU basketball, talking about Bobby Hurley and the high expectations for the program this season for ASU. Where is your patience level with Bobby Hurley right now? Here are the three options. Still good. It's just been a weird season. We're just going to kind of move past this and look ahead to next year. Second option is I'm starting to feel more frustrated. Or the third option, I am ready to move on from him.
Weird season. And Bobby's done a good job. He's been a good coach for ASU. He's been able to recruit great players and he's had a lot of success. And this is just a weird season. So I'm going to write this one off as a bad season and expect that Bobby's going to go back out and bring in some more good players and find a way to keep ASU competitive.
I'm Dave Burns, and I approve of that message. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, definitely. So do 53% of our voters, close to 54%. They say still good with Bobby Hurley and what he's bringing to the program. It's just an odd year. 30% are starting to feel a bit more frustrated with him and the program. 17% say they are ready to move on from him.
Yeah, and just as an explainer, that last option seems a little extreme. Sarah put that in there because she noticed last night on Twitter that there were a lot of ASU fans who were expressing frustration about Bobby to the point almost implying that they were ready to move on, which just seems absolutely cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs
to think about
something like that. But it was enough there to warrant you putting it in, even though people are reacting to it today like, what? Getting rid of Bobby? Who the hell's talking about getting rid of Bobby? The other question real quick, and we're starting to get a little short on time, but was an open-ended question about Hank Aaron. And I'm sure you're getting a lot of good responses on social media about what he meant and the impact that he delivered to a lot of people in their lives.
Yeah, so I'll just read three of them since we are short on time. Chris and Phoenix Mix responded. And the question was just kind of share memories of him, you know, just general thoughts about Hank Aaron. Chris in Phoenix says, I still have my scrapbook as a 10-year-old of the Arizona Republic newspaper articles of his run from late 1973 to breaking the record in 74. The man was a true treasure and American hero for accomplishing what he did in the face of such hateful and dangerous vitriol. Steve Salvage says, I grew up hearing about Hank Aaron from my dad, but when Sosa and McGuire were going for the record, that's when you really started to hear how special of a player Hank was. Then when all of the steroid stuff broke out, put Hank back into a realm all himself. One last one from Matt. He says he worked at a Publix grocery store in high school. Hank Aaron came in to sign autographs one day. He asked me if I could get him a water. It was the first and only time in the years I worked there I felt like I did anything important.
That's great. I love that. Awesome. That's a great story.
That's fantastic.
I got Hank Aaron a water.
Yeah. And he says, I was a nervous high school kid. He sent us a second tweet. Matt says, I was a nervous high school kid. It took forever to muster up the courage to talk to him and ask if I could make him more comfortable. That's one of those moments I will never forget.
Yeah, we had Tim Kirkchen on the show earlier, and he brought up when they had Hank in their booth a couple years ago, somebody on Twitter took a screenshot of it and said, marry somebody who looks at you the way Tim Kirkchen looks at Hank Aaron. And he brought that up when he was with us, and we all got a good laugh out of that. All right, Suns basketball. Thank you, Sarah. Suns basketball tonight against the Denver Nuggets, and obviously Jordan is still on paternity leave, so it apparently is not bad news for the Denver Nuggets, at least not.
But we hope it will be. We hope it will be.
We just can't do our little bit because it doesn't work unless Jordan and Gambo are both here. Sorry, Cody, no disrespect, but that's just how it has to be. It's a curious game tonight because it's the first of two. They're playing each other in a back-to-back set both here. We've seen these little pods. The Suns are getting Jalen Smith back tonight. The Nuggets are getting Michael Porter Jr. back tonight. The Nuggets have been a bit of a disappointment so far, only 7-7 on the season. Their defense hasn't been good at all. They had high expectations coming into the season. So far, through about 20% of the season, they have not lived up to those high expectations so far.
No, they're a one-man show. I mean, Nikola Jokic is averaging 25 points, 11.5 rebounds, and 10 assists per game. I mean, he has been, you know, all that in a bag of chips, but they're not getting anything out of Harris, and you've got, you know, Murray's banged up, and Porter Jr. hasn't played in a long time. So, you know, they're just not a healthy team, and they, you know, a lot of guys aren't playing very well for them. So they're 7-7. I mean, if the playoffs were today, they would not be in. They're not one of the top eight teams in the West. So that's, you know, that's a disappointment for Denver because they have such high hopes. Now, you know, if Murray's elbow heals and if Porter Jr. Works himself back into shape and, you know, if Harris can figure some things out, then, you know, then it will, you know, maybe it can work for them. And it might have to make some changes. Maybe Jermichael Green over Paul Millsap. They might have to make some changes in that starting lineup because they're just, I mean, really, I can't wait to watch him tonight because they really are just a one-man show.
I can't wait to watch them tonight either because I still think when it's all said and done, a top three team in the West, I don't know, maybe not now, but I still think they're a playoff team. I still think they will be one of the top eight teams there. I think they will start to play better and start to figure things out when they start to get a little bit healthier. Obviously, they're missing Jeremy Grant, who left and went to the Pistons when it was all said and done. But I'm looking forward to this because this is still, in my mind, even though the record is not elite, there's still some very good talent that the Suns are playing tonight, including an MVP candidate in Jokic. And once again, I mean, I hate to keep making this about DeAndre Ayton all the time, but man, another great opportunity for DeAndre Ayton to kind of set that bar, right, and continue to move the meter in terms of how he impacts this basketball team. It's a tremendous challenge in front of him to play that well against Jokic, and I want to see how he responds to that, given everything that's been said about him all week long and how well he's played. This is a really good matchup to see how he – and look, something else that's happening too. This is the first time the Phoenix Suns have played a home game in, what, 2 weeks?
Has it been 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's been 2 weeks.
Yeah, because they had three games postponed, right?
Yeah, they had all those games postponed. They played Detroit, Indiana, Washington on the road. They were shut down for a week. They came back. They played Memphis on the road, Houston on the road. They haven't played a game in their building in nearly 2 weeks. I hope that lends itself to a better, more comfortable brand of basketball for the Suns tonight. But I still think these are two of the better teams, best teams in the Western Conference, and I'm pretty jacked to see how they play against each other the next
couple of nights. Well, listen, Jokic is fantastic, right? But the one thing he, you know, they have, Jerami Grant, we talked about this when we talked about the Suns, whether the Suns would go after a Jerami Grant. Jerami Grant is a good defender, you know, very good defender. So, you know, poor rebound, I can't really score, but he was a really good defender when he was there, and he made up for a lot of the mistakes that Jokic would make. So not having him there, I think, has really hurt them because he was one of those guys, you know, just really good ISO defender, really good team defender, and he could make up for the stuff that was struggling with Jokic. So I think they're missing him. But I don't look at this game and be like, oh, the Suns have to win this game. I mean, Denver, Jokic is that good. It's not like they're, you know, they're hanging around 500. That's all you got to do is hang around Memphis, right, without Ja Morant. Just hang around for a little bit, you know, until you can get some guys back. Memphis hung around. Now they got Ja back, and they didn't lose their season. Denver hasn't lost their season yet. They just need these other guys to get healthy.
Yeah. Coming up on this Friday edition, one of the NFL's leading draft analysts has put out his first mock draft, and who he has the Cardinals taking in the first round is one that has met the approval of many. Let's just see if we can get there 3 months from now. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. That is Football Friday here on the Burns and Gambo Show. And even though it's only January 22nd, even though we're still 3 months away from the actual NFL draft, it's never a bad thing to take a peek at a mock draft or two just to get an idea of what people are thinking and what might be out there. It's very difficult to predict this early in the process, but there's certain guys we just give a little more credence to than others, and Daniel Jeremiah is one of them. He's the lead NFL draft analyst for NFL.com and the NFL Network. He put out his first mock draft today. He's got the Cardinals with the 16th pick, taking an edge rusher, Jalen Phillips, out of Miami. He was a UCLA guy. He transferred to Miami, had a really, really good year. The knock on him is there's just not a ton of tape on him because he's been dealing with a lot of injuries throughout some of his career. So there's just not a lot of, you know, stuff out there to watch on him. But he calls him, Jeremiah calls him, the most gifted pass rusher in this year's draft. He has excellent get off. He can bend at the top of his rush, and he is a finisher.
Yeah, he had some great games. Great game against Clemson. Great game against Virginia Tech. Could really, you know, put pressure on the quarterback. You know, fantastic. Now, let's just talk about the position. Because edge rusher, if you could get somebody like this in here, then it really gives you the leverage as far as Chandler Jones is concerned a year from now. So say you keep Chandler. He's on the final year of his deal. You know, you bring in an edge rusher. You like him. He's good. You feel like he's a future. He's got a year of experience under his belt. You're not forced to have to keep Chandler Jones if you don't want to. You can look at Chandler's age and production and injury history and might be able to say, we can afford to let him go because we got a guy that's entering his second year that we really believe in. So, you know, that's an important thing to do, is to have that guy in place for when Chandler isn't going to be on your team anymore. Yeah. So I'm all for the pass rushers. I think you've always got to look for those guys.
That's such a good point. I wish we had talked about this and thought about this earlier, because you're absolutely right. It's what they didn't do with Patrick Peterson, right? It's what they haven't done with Patrick Peterson in the last couple of years. They haven't drafted and developed a cornerback to be able to allow them to say, yeah, Patrick, thank you for everything, but we're going to go in a different direction. And, you know, the Steelers made an industry out of this, you know, 15 years ago, consistently drafting guy's replacement, you know, 2 or 3 years before they would need to replace him, knowing full well. I mean, and in some ways, it's what the Cardinals did with A.Q. Shipley and Mason Cole, right? And it worked, kind of, and then Mason Cole didn't have a very good year, and now no one's sure whether it worked or not.
It was supposed to work.
It was supposed to work, and we felt good about it working until Mason Cole played this year, and now we don't as much. But that's exactly what you do. You draft a pass rusher so that a year from now you don't have to be pressured into making some multi-million dollar potential mistake of a decision about Chandler Jones when you feel like you've got your ready-made replacement for him on the roster. They didn't do that with Patrick Peterson, and because of that, they're kind of scrambling a little bit this year at the cornerback position because they really don't have that guy on the roster to replace him if he walks.
No, no. I mean, that's ideally that it doesn't work out that way. You always try it, but it's very hard to do. But I think it's, you know, look, if you replace Patrick Peterson, you're gonna have to do it, you know, probably through free agency or a trade because I don't know you're gonna draft anybody that's gonna come in and replace Patrick Peterson. But Chandler Jones, you have the ability to wait. Like you have the ability to have Chandler and somebody else on the team at the same time. And that's why pass rusher makes a lot of sense. You know, offensive linemen, you always got a ton of offensive linemen. Pass rushers are hard to come by. You know, before they got Chandler, Chandler was supposed to be the missing piece. Remember, it was just so hard, you know, to get, you know, to find pass rushers. And then they got Chandler, like, okay, that's it. That should put them over the top. It hasn't done it. Not his fault. No fault to his. He's been great for them.
And adding to the complexity of all of this is just the state in general of the Cardinals' defensive line. We were talking about this earlier. We kind of ran out of time. We didn't have as much time as I wanted to. But RaisingZona.com took a look at the state of the Cardinals' D-line. And, man, we get so focused on wide receiver and cornerback and running back. You know, there are several positions on this Cardinals roster where you look at it, and there are a bunch of question marks. D-line is definitely one of them.
Yeah. Because you look at the guys they have, and you're like, okay, what's going to happen with Corey Peters? Like, I like him, but he's old, and he got injured. So that's a question mark. Zach Allen, I like him, but he hasn't been able to stay healthy. Jordan Phillips, that looked like a disaster. Now, maybe he comes back with a vengeance this year. He signed, you know, for the next 2 years, but we'll see what happens. But he didn't play very well. Angelo Blackson, great fit for them. Good job. They did a good job getting Angelo Blackson. I thought he was a good player for them. Lekki Fotu and Rashad Lawrence, word is both of those guys are going to be good players in this league. That those are two good draft picks that can help. So, you know, that's the defensive line. But you look at the pass rush. You look at the rushers. And you're like, what's going to happen with Hassan Reddick? What's going to happen with Marcus Golden? And what's going to happen with Chandler Jones? And the uncertainty there makes you think like, okay, that's why a pass rusher could be very, very high on their list. And as we've talked about, me and you, and you've said it quite a few times, like you don't want to settle for the third best cornerback when you might be able to get yourself, you know, the second best or, you know, edge rusher. Get the best available player and don't settle on a position.
And hopefully the Cardinals, and they did it last year, and we'll see about Isaiah Simmons, but hopefully the Cardinals can put themselves in a position where they can go into the draft not feeling like they have to take a certain position. I think we all knew before the Hopkins trade that they were probably going to take a wide receiver in the first round. Everything seemed to be pointing in that direction, a C.D. Lamb type or something along those lines. Once they went out and got Hopkins, man, that just changed the whole equation. Because now it freed you to really do truly whatever you wanted to do and not being married to some kind of need. If they don't address the cornerback position in free agency before the draft, and honestly, I think that's an impossibility. They're going to have to address it somehow. But if they don't, they're going to have to draft a cornerback in the first or second round. They're not going to have a choice. They're going to need to bring a body into the team and onto the roster, and you just hope that they're not reaching for somebody that they shouldn't be taking in the first place.
Well, then you also can't expect that guy to come in here and be your number one shutdown corner. Like, that's just not
right.
Going to happen. So, you know, we saw it this past year. I mean, Jeff Okuda is going to end up being a good player in this league. He wasn't ready, you know, and then Henderson, too. Like, those guys were not ready to be shutdown corners in year one. You got to get some experience. You got to get some practices. You got to get some reps in order to be able to do that. So I think that they'll, you know, listen, if they draft a pass rusher, I'm not disappointed. If they draft a edge rusher, I'm not disappointed. I mean, there's a lot of positions that they could draft that we'd be like, okay, that's fine. I'm not disappointed in that.
Yeah. Coming up, Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have a chance to do something that hasn't been done in 10 years. We'll tell you what that is and give you our prediction for the NFC Championship game coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.